It's the Joe Shuster Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards!
The second annual. I forgot to call it the Joe Shuster Awards 1 year later.
We are delighted to introduce two people without whom these awards really would not happen.
In fact, I really weep for pop culture in general had these two gentlemen not come along.
Now, exactly. These two are icons. They're much beloved and infamous all over. One is a columnist for the Toronto Star. He's also host of Salem's Lot on Driving Classics. He's a bon vivant, a philanthropist, a scholar, a man about town, choreographer, cultural icon, Olympic thrower, inventor, pioneer in the struggle for equal rights for transvestite animals, and a member of the Hair Club for Men, president of the Hair Club for Men, and head of human resources for the Hair Club for Men. Ladies and gentlemen, a round warm of welcome for Rob Salem. Yeah.
This is Rick Rick. No, you know Rick, of course, from the Frantics, coming soon to a theater near you.
Yeah.
Back together again, will you guys never grow up?
Nope.
Not to be confused with Red Green, a show which he also had something to do with. And History Bites, which I have got on record as saying is the funniest show on television.
Yeah.
And I stick by it. And we are happy to be here once again. And to be referred to in the program as the dynamic duo, which
yes, exactly.
Is way cool.
Yeah, wait, it's actually about 4.5 people, but that's the good news. We are delighted to be here. Of course, my cachet with all of you is, for some of you who remember, is Prisoners of Gravity on TV Ontario. Call Space Game to rerun it would be my advice. We're delighted to be here. We're going to have a great deal of fun. We've got some legendary people in the room. We're going to be honoring these legends. And you'll be here to say, I was there for the first year. Now, how many people were actually here at last year's awards? Give us a round of applause. Well, right, so if you keep this up, you can say I've been to them all. In fact, last year you could have said that just being there once. All right. And I think we're going to start.
Why not?
All right.
I'm sick of talking about us.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to begin with the founder and the chief coordinator of the Joe Shuster Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards. Without him, we wouldn't be here, this wouldn't be happening, these plaques wouldn't be happening, and all these people wouldn't be honored. So, pretty cool what he's done. And it's cool how many people have jumped on board and supported him. So it's very exciting. He is a comic book writer, he's a former publisher of comic books, until Revenue Canada caught on, and, no, that's not true. Would you welcome, please, the ever-delightful James Whaley.
Yes, well, welcome to the dawning of JSA Year 2. No, not that JSA, the Joe Shuster Awards Year 2. Now, for any of you in the audience that attended the awards last year, I've been reminded on a number of occasions by my colleagues to keep my speech this time brief. I can take it in. Last year we opened ourselves to a lot of good-natured ridicule and criticism when we mistakenly labeled our 2005 awards event the first annual Canadian Comic Book Creator Awards, as we were constantly reminded that it was a bit of a misnomer to call something first and annual when we only had one ceremony under our belts. Well, call me overconfident or foolhardy, but I for one never doubted that we'd started something important and vital in the Canadian comic book community, and here we are a year later, and let me tell you, we're here for the long run. Now the first year's event certainly didn't come off without a hitch. Remember, no AC, okay? But despite any glitches, it was truly an evening of lasting memories. Joe Shuster's sister, Jean Shuster Peavy, and her daughter, Dawn, making a last-minute decision to attend this show, and along with the other Shuster family members, their kindness and presence really launched that inaugural ceremony. Jerry Robinson's keynote address and his personal reminiscences of Joe lent a historic historical element to the event that couldn't be denied. Rick Green and Rob Salem's clever and professional handling of the MC duties put the crowd at ease and kept the ceremony moving along in an air of keen comic book knowledge and sharp comic timing. Not to mention our many and varied presenters, particularly Ed the Sock and Leanna Kay, who lightened the proceedings with their quick wit and sharp banter. And of course, the many award recipients who were truly touched and moved by the recognition bestowed on them by their fans and peers. All this and more is forever seared into my memory in the afterglow of that day in April in 2005. Now, we've come a long way in the last year. A few missteps, of course, and a couple two steps forward, one step back, but hey, we're new at this. Thanks to everyone that worked so hard to make this event happen again, and to all our sponsors, new and old. Enjoy the evening as we honor and celebrate the immense comic book talent that this great country has to offer. Now, in closing, I want to dedicate this year's event to a new member of our awards family, Francisco Rosa of Montreal, a member of our nominating committee and an individual who opened our proceedings to the wonder and vastness of the comic book or BD community in La Belle Province. Francisco did his work on the committee far above and beyond the call of duty, and we wish him well with his recent health problems, and that his stay in the hospital will not only be brief, but will restore him to his former enthusiastic self. Also, I would like to dedicate this evening to my children, Mary and Josh, who's out there somewhere. May the future hold great promise and joy, and may you face the road ahead with your eyes wide open. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce this evening's keynote speaker, a comic book writer from 1989 to 2001 who wrote for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Viz, and many other publishers, and for series including Green Lantern, Justice League, El Diablo, Wonder Man, The Shadow, Pokemon, and The Batman. The author of Killing Monsters, Why Children Need Fantasy, Superheroes, and Make-Believe, Violence, Honey, I'm Home, sitcom Selling the American Dream, and more recently, Men of Tomorrow, Geeks, Gangsters, and The Birth of the Comic Book. Eisner Award winner, Gerard Jones.
I could probably use the timer too, but I'll do my best to keep it to the point. Thank you for having me. My first time in Toronto, and it is a gorgeous city, so thanks for getting me up here. It could be pretty easily argued that the most important single event in the comic book business as we know it, comic book medium as we know it, was the publication of Superman in 1938. It was from that the American comic book industry came. It was from that eventually that fandom as we know it came. It was from that the whole superhero business and all of its attendant franchising and global marketing came. And these things, like them or not, are still kind of the commercial and creative fuel for much of this world-spanning medium that we love so much. Hey, that's me. I remember that day. Canada's contribution to Superman was twofold, one creative and one commercial. Joe Shuster, of course, was the creative contribution. Joe's grandfather had left Russia for the Netherlands to escape the pogroms of the late 19th century, and then his sons, feeling as though they weren't making enough headway, there weren't enough opportunities in old Europe, came to Toronto, which was a booming industrial city at the turn of the century. And Joe's uncle did well in business. Joe's father did not. Joe's dad was tried to run a tailor shop in Toronto. It didn't work out. He went broke, so he ended up crossing the lake, going to Cleveland, where the Jewish community was doing particularly well at the moment. He still didn't do very well, but it turned out that after Joe moved to Cleveland, he was 10 years old when he left Toronto and went to Cleveland, Joe met Jerry Siegel. Joe met Jerry in high school. Jerry was a local Clevelander. Most of you probably know this story very well. And they came up with this idea of Superman, this peculiar creation that took sort of all the hero myths in popular culture, all the slapstick, all this material from movies and cartoons and comic strips, and distilled it down into one little primary colored pure concept, this distillation of fantasies of power and liberation and invincibility. And at first couldn't find a market for it. For years they were unable to place it, until finally in the late 1930s they found a fly-by-night publisher, actually at the time a printer, distributor, sort of publisher named Harry Donenfeld, who was just in the process of taking over a company called Detective Comics Incorporated. Now Harry was not Canadian, he had come straight from Romania to New York, but a lot of his capital, a lot of his money had a Canadian connection. Because in 1920, when Joe Shuster was 6 years old, still living in Toronto, the government of the United States felt that the way to clean up our society and make it a better and more genteel place was to make the sale of alcohol illegal. It was a great stroke for the Canadian economy, because immediately people realized that Americans were not going to give up this essential material. This was the lifeblood of most Americans. And an easy way to bring it into the country was down through Canada. So there was great business suddenly for like the Molson people right down the road, the Seagrams and some of the other industries here. And there was also the seed money then for some of the most inspiring success stories in American history. Al Capone, Meyer Lansky, Frank Costello. These people who went from the streets, from little rackets in the ghettos, to tremendous wealth and political influence in the course of a few years, thanks to Prohibition. One of the minor functionaries of the Frank Costello mob was Harry Donenfeld, who had been a garment salesman and a gambler, and just one of these guys who were knocking around the Lower East Side. Until, through various connections, he discovered his brothers ran a printing company. Harry did some sales for the printing company. It turned out that a printing company in New York was perfectly placed for moving bottles in from Canada, because they were already bringing paper in from Canada in tremendous quantities. And it was very easy to just keep this distribution network, what had been paper for the printing presses. And they still did the paper for the printing presses, but they also did whiskey and beer for the Frank Costello, Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, Bugsy Siegel group, who were distributing heavily in New York. So Prohibition ended in 1934. All of a sudden, these people had to find other ways to make money and other places to put the money they'd accumulated. And it was in the mid-30s that Harry Donenfeld began to expand rapidly in publishing. His combination of the bootlegging and printing now became basically just printing. And in 37, he and his partners kind of accidentally moved into the comic book field. So there was this Canadian-derived capital, in a sense. And here at the same time was Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster sending their Superman ideas out and not finding a buyer. And placed Superman with the Donenfeld, not because of Harry's intervention, but because of a couple of teenage editors, Shelley Mayer and Vin Sullivan, who happened to be there. And from this strange combination of innocent teenage inventiveness and marginal business and slightly shady money came the American comic book business, and in some sense the global comic book business. And I am fascinated by this way that comics still unite what is innocent and full of life and full of creative commitment, and what's a little bit subversive and a little bit shady. And I think this is one of the things that keeps the business so vital. It will always flow back and forth. It's a great medium in that it is such a cheap medium, and it remains still a way that people can get their particular visions out. Joe Shuster, with his dreams of futuristic cities and bodybuilders and men in tights, and combined with Jerry Siegel's particular science fiction inventions, couldn't have made it in book illustration without some other way into the cultural firmament. He couldn't have made it in animated cartoons. It was, you know, he was a good draftsman, but the vision was peculiar. And comics have always been this place where these odd visions can find their way out of someone's imagination and into the world, because if nothing else, the startup cost is small and the fandom is there and the word of mouth is there. So I think being here, I can't speak well of Canada. I can't speak thoroughly of Canada, pardon me. I feel like a little bit of an interloper. And I was almost a Canadian by birth, actually. My dad used to work at Glacier Park in Montana, and my mom was 8 months pregnant once when they came up, and they had this choice between me being born in Cutbank, Montana, or Lethbridge, Alberta. And Lethbridge, they said, was a better hospital, because, you know, you have a better health system up here, but they thought it would be too complicated with the double, you know, my birth certificate being in foreign countries, so I stuck being a Montana native. But what I do see in the story of Joe Shuster, the story of comics, the story, well, I'll mention Dave Sim, if I may, someone who discovered that power of that ability to just do your own work and do it on a shoestring and get it out there and build a following and create a significant success, a global success that changed the way the comic business runs. It's this thread that I think makes Joe still relevant. We know the stories of Joe having been screwed by his publishers, of Joe having been driven into poverty, and of the struggle late in his life by Joe and Jerry to get some compensation and some credit back. And that's a relevant story. It's a powerful story. But in some ways, I think what's most powerful is just the continuing reality that comics is a medium in which people can find ways to get their visions out there, and they can find ways to prosper, and bit by little bit, change the culture of the world. So thanks again.
The Superman saga, as much of a Superman geek as I've been over the years, last year I learned about the whole coming out of this failed Shmata business, and now bootleg alcohol. I'm even more of a Superman geek. Really speaks to me. Now, moving on to the reason we're all here, let's hand out some awards. I'd like to introduce somebody, again, although we've said this now three times, this is literally true, without whom there wouldn't be Shuster Awards, because last year she won for the Outstanding Writer, our first tie, and is nominated again this year. She's here to present the Outstanding Canadian Comic Book Artist Award, television and comic book writer with work on such series as Jeremiah and Babylon 5, the Marvel titles Strange, Spectacular Spider-Man, and Dr. Spectrum. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Sarah Sam Barnes.
Imagine, if you will, a world, this world, without pictures. This convention would be half its size, and I would definitely be out of a job. The artist breathes a fresh and wonderful life into the words of a writer. And for that, as a writer, I am eternally thankful. I have worked with some amazing artists, and I'm really privileged to be here and presenting the Outstanding Canadian Comic Book Artist Award. The talent here is outstanding, and every one of them deserves to win this award. Let's start with the nominees. Adrian Alfora, Runway Volume 2,
yeah!
1 through 6, 9 through 11, Marvel Comics. Dale Eagleson, Villains United, 1, 2, 4 through 6, DC Comics. Dave Finch, New Avengers, 2 through 6, 11 through 13, Marvel Comics. Pierre Guerrero, Why the Last Man, 30, 31, 36 through 39, DC Vertigo, Spider-Man Unlimited, 10, Marvel. Igor Corday, Smoke 133 IDW. Terry LaBrosa, Moria, Volume 4, pardon my French, Un Parfum d'Eternité, Edition Soleil. Jack Lamontagne, Des Druets, Volume 1, Le Mystère de Orcan, Edition Soleil. Let me open the envelope. It's beautiful. And the winner is Pia Guerrero. Unfortunately, I was not able to attend this year's Schuster. She's getting married next week. And I look forward to delivering this to her personally in Vancouver. So thank you very much.
We have the plaque for me? Yeah. Oh, we got to show the plaque. You got to. This is so lovely. All right, we have four Hall of Fame awards to be presented this evening. The first one is going to be presented by a good friend of mine. He is written comics, The Prisoner and The Silencers. He is a producer at Space, and as I tell everybody, he is really the man who made Prisoners of Gravity happen. He is the driving force. He is the creator, really, behind the series. He's the one who brought so much of the expertise. And in an industry where the heroes, so many of the heroes, are outsiders, he's the ultimate insider of the outsiders, because he knows everybody. And in the office of Prisoners of Gravity, the phone would ring and ring and ring. People would be calling, big names and small, names even I knew, would be calling to ask Mark questions, to say if they knew something, to find out how much they should charge for the next job they were getting for a comic, on and on and on. He's an amazing human being and just a good guy. Would you welcome, please, my friend, Mark Asco. Mark.
I always get embarrassed when he does that. I think it was just because I had a good Rolodex that they hired me. Last year, the Schuster Awards honored several Canadian comic book creators. With the exception of the wonderful Hal Foster, most of those got their start during the war years with the publication of what are known as the Canadian Whites. This year, I'm honored to have been asked by the committee to say a few words about one of this year's Schuster Hall of Fame recipients. He was a great fan of Hal Foster and the Canadian White creators, and I'm sure he would be delighted to be in their company. Owen McCarron was born and raised in Halifax. In the course of his life, he was a historian, an art director, a comic book writer, artist, publisher, husband, father, and grandfather. And picking up on something that Jerry said earlier today, it's stunning to me how many people in Canadian comics have more than one job. Owen McCarron is possibly best known to our American guests as the creator of the Mighty Marvel Superhero Fun Book, which is a collection of puzzles and word games that featured popular Marvel characters like Spider-Man and the Hulk. These books grew out of Owen McCarron's Fun and Game comics, which were published weekly in the 70s and 80s in the Mayflower TV supplements. As well, his company, Comic Book World, was the only Canadian comic book publisher in the 60s, and for over 20 years, he produced promotional giveaway comics for corporate clients like Kentucky Fried Chicken and Gulf Canada, including a rather famous Wade and Schuster comic. Owen also created educational comics like Captain Enviro and a tour of the Nova Scotia Power Company. Phil Latter, who interviewed Owen in his home in 2003, sent this description of the McCarron home. The walls were festooned with innumerable framed original art examples, signed original art by Charlie Brown's, Charles Schultz, Alex Raymond, and endless famous others, including the original unpublished Steve Ditko cover to Amazing Spider-Man 10. There were also signed letters from Ronald and Nancy Reagan and Bill Clinton thanking Owen McCarron for his lifetime of comic art. Owen McCarron passed away last summer. He was 76. On behalf of the committee, I would like you to join us, and Dorothy and Adam, who've come in all the way from Halifax, in welcoming Owen McCarron to the Schuster Hall of Fame.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ed McCarron, the youngest of four sons. This is my mother, Dorothy. We are pleased to come from the east coast of Canada, province of Nova Scotia, to accept this award for Owen McCarron. My father was very famous for using his big black markers to address birthday cards. I always knew who it was from before I ever opened it, because the envelope was full of black marker and the stamp was never stamped because the post office couldn't figure it out. In this filing cabinet was a picture of the four boys. We were little, and the words written across this picture with the big black marker said, "This is why I work so bloody hard." So it's a great memory, and yes, he worked day and night doing what he loved to do, making his pencils and markers go. The result from his hard work is found all over the world and still talked about by lots today. And that's what brings us here tonight for more proof of this accomplishment. I never remember my father buying anything for himself or thinking he was better than anybody else. Well, maybe thinking he was better at a game of cricket. He was a very private man who stayed home with his wife and kids and did whatever he could do to get us where we are today. I'd like to thank everybody involved for getting this award for us, and we're very pleased to come to accept it. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Thank you for coming all the way tonight. I'd just like to take the opportunity to point out that Mark Asquith gave me this pin, so I'd like to announce our engagement. Now it is time for the award for Outstanding Comic Book Publisher, Canadian Comic Book Publisher. Presenter the hero is probably best known for her Scary Godmother series, which can be seen in animated form on the Cartoon Network. As an artist, she was equally at home drawing stark dramatic storylines or quirky comedic material. She is the recipient of an Eisner Award for her Dark Horse story, Stray. Please welcome to Toronto and to the Joe Schuster Awards, comic book writer-artist Jill Thompson.
Canadian comic book publisher are Drawn in Quarterly. Drawn in Quarterly is based in Montreal, Quebec, and publishes such celebrated talents as Chester Brown, Joe Matt, and Seth, and has become one of the most influential art and literary comics publishers in North America, if not the world. High school French, don't fail me now. Édition de la Pastèque. And now I'm going to know what that means. This Quebec-based publisher began in 1997 and decided to name their company after the watermelon, which they felt was a refreshing fruit. Years later, and dozens of titles published, they continue in their mission to inject a little optimism into the field of bande dessinée, the French term for comics. Edition Premier Land, established in 2003, but active in the world of publication since 1999, the Studio Edition Premier Land, or First Lines, has a catalog rich with material with 13 titles and envisaged in the next year, mixing the work of cartoonists of all ages from Quebec and overseas. Speakeasy Comics. Founded in August of 2004, Speakeasy published such diverse titles as Atomica, The Grimoire, Beowulf, and Spellgame. After a brief but exciting time in the comic publishing industry, they reluctantly closed their doors earlier this year due to financial difficulties. And finally, Udon Comics. Udon Comics began as a studio or art collective of Asian-influenced comic book creators and became a full-fledged publisher in October of 2005, with the initial release of such titles as Street Fighter II and Exalted, with more to follow in the future. The outstanding Canadian comic book publisher is... in here somewhere. It's Drawn and Quarterly.
I'm Chester Brown. I've been published by Drawn and Quarterly for many, many years now. We artists and writers who create the books for Drawn and Quarterly are the ones who usually get all the glory. But one of the reasons our books end up looking so good is because Chris Oliveros cares about the books so much, and as much as we do. I've always been proud to say that Drawn and Quarterly is my publisher, thanks to the people who voted for Drawn and Quarterly for recognizing what Chris does. Thanks.
We have another Hall of Fame award, and returning this year as our presenter is the newly appointed Hall of Fame Selections Committee Coordinator, who will be coordinating the Hall of Fame Selections Committee for the Hall of Fame. They'll be the committee doing the selections. He will be coordinating, mainly in terms of the name. He's also a television writer with credits that include Sticking Around, Metabots, Jacob Tutu, and the Beyblade movie. He's done any number of things, and that's just a short list of the many things he's done. He's a tireless comic book historian, thanks to the drugs he takes that keep him awake. He actually tracked down the original Canadian creator of the comic book character Mr. Monster, Fred Kelly, which is Mr. Monster, and Fred Kelly was the man who created him, not that Fred Kelly was a monster. He continues to write about and follow the comic book medium, as well as developing television and graphic story productions. Put your hands together and pull them apart and put them back together rapidly for Rob Pinkholm. Rob!
Thank you. The nomination for the committee thing is news to me, too. I should just graciously say thank you all for who have no idea who I am for applauding so nicely. But let's put the focus where it needs to be today. As a member of the Hall of Fame Committee, I can tell you that one of the great pleasures that we have is to help shine a spotlight on figures in our extensive history whose contributions was mighty, but their recognition was not. John Stables, or John St. Abels, is one of those people. Many of us have heard that in December 1940, the Canadian government introduced the War Exchange Conservation Act, restricting the importation of non-essential goods, including many U.S. magazines, pulps, and comic books, leaving children across the country wondering, how could they ever think Superman, Batman, the Human Torch, and Captain America and Marvel are non-essential? Who's in charge? The first publisher to fill that void, and there were several, with original homegrown comics was not the more famous Bell Features with their Johnny Canuck, their Thunder Fist, Dart Daring, and Nelvana of the Northern Lights. It was, in fact, former Disney artist Vernon Wells who convinced a Vancouver magazine vendor named Harry Smith to form Maple Leaf Comics in 1941. It was Wells who created Canada's first superhero, Iron Man. New relation. If any of the lawyers from Marvel are here, they're not the same. Meanwhile, while that was happening, John Stables had come to Vancouver from Winnipeg, and after a struggle, finally sold some of his paintings and began to secure advertising commissions, which enabled him to bring his Winnipeg sweetheart Esther to town and marry the heck out of her. Then John did what many red-blooded Canadian men did. He enlisted in the army as World War II was raging. One of two wars, probably the second, would be the right one. The sequel, which was way better than the book, I gotta say. The recruiter was actually keeping an eye open for people who could help them create propaganda for the war effort, and John seemed to fit the bill. So he was sent to Toronto to talk with a staff officer who basically took his sweet time figuring out what to do with John. He had moved his bride there. Meanwhile, back in Vancouver, Harry Smith had seen John's work, and on a business trip to Toronto, he decided to look him up and hired him on the spot. So they, John liked the idea, and he moved back to Vancouver, left his address with the recruiter, and never heard from the army again. I think they're still looking for him. Suddenly, John Stables was a comic book artist, and that's the end of that running gag. He left his... the army's loss was our gain. There you are. John was a very experienced artist and was also extremely adaptable. He quickly replaced Vernon Wells as art director and became one of the main cover artists for Maple Leaf Comics. And he also created several new strips, including the globe-trotting adventurer Bill Speed, who was named after an artist friend, Piltdown Pete, a caveman strip with a very sophisticated yet cartoony Bigfoot art and clever plotting, and the slightly better known Brock Windsor, a two-fisted hero whose fantasy adventures took place in the Valley Beyond the Mist and who is depicted on the commemorative Hall of Fame Jam poster this year. With four bi-monthly titles, the staff at Maple Leaf Comics had 24 comics a year to fill, and John was a writer as well as an artist and used wordplay and language with the same facility as he used his brush. He signed his name St. Owls, Stab, Stables, John, Jack, and later Brock, depending on his mood. And he always said he dropped the silent H from his name because he couldn't stand a letter that wouldn't pull its weight. John loved working with his staff, a close friend, writer and editor Ted Ross, to convince ideas for the story, and there was a real pride and sense that they were all lucky at this time and place to be getting paid to do something that was so much fun. And Maple Leaf Comics were easily the slickest being produced in Canada at the time. Harry Smith made sure they had excellent printing, the color on the covers was top-notch, and he had the cleverest artists on the West Coast all for himself. At the end of the war, Maple Leaf began printing their books in full color as the borders opened, and the American comics flooded back into the country, but after investigating the challenges he would have to overcome to find new markets, untested markets, to make the venture worthwhile, Harry realized he would lose his shirt. He was canny enough to jump into the comic book business early, but that same business sense told him he should get out just as fast. They closed the door to Maple Leaf Comics in 1946, and no one was more disappointed than John, who knew he might never have a better job than doing his own comics. And John continued to be art directors for various companies throughout the rest of his life. He was a sculptor, a painter, a master of many forms of art through sheer hard work and creativity, and was still doing that sort of work till he died. John was one of the top creators of his day, proudly creating unique Canadian comics for kids, for adults, and for himself. And it is my great pleasure to induct John Stables, aka John St. Owls, into the Joe Shuster Canadian Comic Book Hall of Fame. John's son and granddaughter are here to accept the award.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you all. If my father were here today, I know that he would be tickled, and he would have trouble believing that this happened. And not just for himself, but for the other 10 artists and writers who worked in Maple Leaf and for Harry Smith, the publisher. I think the thing that I see as a contribution from that group was actually to contribute something to the Canadian identity. And I'm speaking to you with this perfect West Coast United States accent that I've developed since leaving Canada for the last time in 1972. But back in those days, there were a group of diverse people who had come to identify themselves as Canadians. My father had come from England and had been in Canada during the 1930s. By the time the war came along, he and these other men and women were truly believing themselves to be Canadians. They were being created by the Canadian culture, and in turn they were creating the Canadian culture. So for him to be honored by you and by this group would be something that he would be very pleased to know about. When I tell him, I don't think he's going to believe me, but I'm going to give it a try. And this my daughter Rosalind, is a person who has talked about being the next artist in the family. She was together with my dad the last few years of his life, and maybe it skipped a generation. Maybe we can get another one.
What can I tell you about our next two presenters? Well, nothing. They were here last year. In fact, it's my fault. I invited them down, as I recall. Come on down, brothers of the JSAs. They're a whole lot of fun. And, well, they showed up. And they're here again this year to present the same award, the Harry Kramer Award for Outstanding Canadian Comic Book Retailer. Although they were working the floor earlier today, I don't know if you noticed, they're now the subject of their own comic book. And also that fabulous calendar that I believe sold out. There were like two left when I saw. I bought them both. I'm speaking, of course, of Ed and Red, Ed the Sock, and Leanna Kay.
Get up here.
Not up.
No, come on. I'm looking stupid. Get up here.
No one thinks you're looking stupid. Any other adjectives?
Do I have to kill you?
All right, look, this wasn't my idea. It was a big mistake, okay?
Call it what they're calling it this year. Last year, it was a full name. This year, they said, hey, you want to come present at the JSA, the Joe Schuster Awards.
Well, we mistook it for the comic book. So I'm the Golden Age Flash. Oh. You think finding a hat my size is easy? I challenge you to try.
In all seriousness, we're here to present the Harry Kramer Outstanding Comic Book Retailer Award. And we actually are honoring two stores tonight. We have a first runner-up, an honorable mention from Edmonton, Alberta. It's Happy Harbor Comics. And they've given us sort of what makes their store cool in their own words, but I encourage everyone to check out their site, www.happyharborcomics.com, because you just can't give these stores justice in words. I'm going to focus on the community outreach that a lot of these stores do, because it is absolutely incredible. Happy Harbor did a for-charity 24-hour comic book day event that raised over $600 for Alberta literacy.
They need more than that in Alberta. Hey, I've been there!
They also did a 12-hour comic day, raising over $1,000 for Big Brothers and Sisters, and published the stories and produced that day in a big book. They host a series of comic talks forums, which bring in more than 30 creators of mini comics, small press, and professional comic book artists and writers.
Remember what that room smells like?
I remember what last year here smelled like, and I'm really trying not to think about that right now.
All right, fine.
Okay. They do monthly comic book jams, and this year they're planning to do something called the 2006 San Diego Land Cruise, which will take up to 40 participants to the San Diego Comic-Con by bus, stopping at noteworthy comic and genre-related sites along the way, filmed by a documentary crew. The owners of the store, Jay and Shauna, help cover up each other's weaknesses. We don't know what that's like. Jay has an excellent knowledge of superhero comics, while Shauna is more involved in the alternative genre comics end of the spectrum. Together, they were sponsors of the first sci-fi fantasy convention in Edmonton in several years. And Jay has appeared frequently in local news media, including numerous newspaper articles and television appearances promoting comics.
Further to your previous comment, exactly what do you cover up anyway? Because there's not a whole lot that's missing.
Do you have a problem with that?
No, just pointing it out.
Okay. But that was the runner-up. Our winner.
Now wait, the thing about the winner?
Yes.
Is that while we are going to announce the winner, it's possible that after we leave here, it will change when Superboy Prime hits the wall of time, and it changes all continuity.
One never knows. Comic book retailers are the unsung heroes of the comic book industry.
Well, they also serve a lot of unwashed customers, so...
We would not be able to honor artists, writers, cartoonists here tonight if the comic book stores did not get the product into people's hands. They work long hours with very little profit, very little staff, and very few rewards, and it's wonderful to be able to honor the frontline soldiers of the comic book business here tonight. Without further ado, I present the winner of this year's Harry Kramer Outstanding Retailer Award. And I'm just going to say a few words before I announce who they are so you can get a sense of why this store won. One of the first things they said is that they love comics themselves. They've been reading comics for 35 years, selling them for 24. They said you can't sell the stuff if you don't love it. One of the versions of tough love that they practice is running interventions to get people off bad comics and onto good ones. They call it tough love. I've heard it described as the Rob Liefeld 12-step program.
Gotta love those ankles.
They carry the widest and wisest selection of comic and graphic novels, from the biggest mainstream hip to the mini comic made by a local teenager. They claim they're all supporting of their support. They sponsor the annual zine fair held in the fall in their local area. I'm not going to tell you where because that'd give it away. They were recently named to the board of directors for the Word on the Street Literacy Festival to assist in growing the comic and graphic novel representation of the festival. They've contributed graphic novel reviews to CBC's Definitely Not the Opera, and is often called upon by media outlets for information on a variety of pop culture subjects, especially those concerning comics.
And usually the stories start with graphics that are zip, bow, pan. What the hell's the matter with you people? You don't get the reference? The old Batman show, all the comic stories now, they have it out of hell with all of you. I'll put Whaley back up here for 15 minutes. Then behave.
Maybe Superboy Prime will hit the wall and make you funny tonight.
You know, there's family people here, so I can't come back.
Back to the store we're honoring. Their free comic book day events are well known in the city. Last year they gave away approximately 16,000 free comics.
You gotta love a retailer that gives things away.
Well, they managed to stay in business, so I guess they're doing okay. And they have several girls on staff. In the store.
That's just nasty to do that.
What?
That's not even fair. No wonder they're getting the retailer award. That's brilliant. You usually can't get a girl into a comic store. They hire them to work there? That's like putting a salt lick there and saying, come on,
It'll really be good.
The store is designed to make itself non-confrontational and comfortable to comics aficionados and non-comic readers alike. They make the store easy to browse and easy to access. Those who know comics are already your customers. The effort should be made to attract new readers as that grows the whole market. There's a saying out there goes, a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah, you're floating my boat right now. Who's the winner?
Well, the last note is that the owner is devastatingly handsome, which I thought you'd be very happy to know.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
All that is a lead up to our winner. The 2006 Harry Kramer Award goes to Strange Adventures Halifax. And as a sign of their astute purchasing, they were actually the first retailer to approach us about carrying our comics.
To say anything, I just wanted to say thanks very much. The staff at our stores is what really makes it great. Everyone works so hard and really enjoys what they do. You were talking about the girls who were in our store. We recently lost one. She became an assistant editor at Dark Horse Comics.
Nice.
And she worked at Robertson, and she'll be running Dark Horse in a couple of years, so you can send her any of your artwork. All the rest of our staff, Mike Drake, Dave Howlett, everyone who works in the stores, they do such a great job. Sean Jordan, who we've sent on to the Silver Snail to help them out. It's a great deal of fun. But I also want to thank everyone who works in comics, because we just love comics and we love sharing the comics, so it's so great that you guys make them, because we love reading them and sharing them with people. The fact we can make money doing that is just a great byproduct. So thanks a lot.
Because I was going to wear that outfit.
It would look better on you. It's so embarrassing.
I think not.
So it's for anyone to decide. All right, we come to the Outstanding International Comic Book Creator Award. This is a new award. It was instituted as part of the Joe Shuster Awards with the intention of recognizing the worldwide scope of the comic book medium, the fact that it goes beyond the borders of this country. With that in mind, the Canadian comic book community had made their choice in this writing category as to who they feel is the top non-Canadian comic book creator of the last year. Of course, a number of names came up during this process, but the official four runners-up are as follows.
And they are, in fifth runner-up, Brian Michael Bendis for House of M, New Avengers, Pulse, and Ultimate Spider-Man. Fourth runner-up, Jeff Smith for Bone. Third runner-up, Grant Morrison for All-Star Superman, Psych Soldiers. And second runner-up, and of course if the winner should be unable to fulfill their obligations, the second runner-up will not be able to either, but that is Warren Ellis for Fell, Ocean, and Planetary. Please, Richard, if you would do the honors.
These are well lit. And the winner is Brian K. Vaughan, Ex Machina, Runaways, and Why the Last Man.
Accepting for Mr. Vaughan, Adrian Alfona.
You tell him.
And hold him up and put him right up here at the seat.
First, to congratulate you on the award, but everybody wants to hear from you, so you're on right now.
Good, Brian. Thank you very much. Those raised your hand are ridiculous, so I'll try to keep this short. I just want to thank everyone for this tremendous honor. I've always felt that special connection to Shuster, because he and I both grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, so this means a lot to me. I actually have a great deal of affection for Mr. Shuster's homeland as well, not only because my most talented collaborators all reside near my country, but also because my wife happens to be a proud Canadian. So this is the first award I've ever won that she's been impressed by, so I can finally brag about to her. So thanks so much again, and
Okay, moving on. We're just whipping through these things. James, you can come back and do another 20 minutes.
Careful what you ask for.
Yeah, really. Because he's got it ready, I saw. Now, we are... next Hall of Fame Award. Yes. As a presenter for our next Hall of Fame inductee, we welcome a top Toronto comic artist whose work has been published by most of the major North American comic companies, such titles as Rye the Valiant, Avengers West Coast, Marvel Knights Daredevil, and Inhumans at Marvel, and JLA and Birds of Prey. Thank you for Birds of Prey. At DC, please welcome Mr. Dave Ross.
It is with great embarrassment that I take credit for Dave Ross's accomplishments and inflict myself on you again. Dave has laryngitis, and I unfortunately cannot present today because he'll be as quiet as we all expected the cell phone call to be before it happened. You get me. Dave was a good choice to present the award. He actually took a few classes with Wynn at OCA and said that he remembers every time he sits down to draw many of the lessons that he learned from Wynn. And it was definitely another example of a legacy being passed on from one generation to the next. But Wynn Mortimer was a consummate storyteller, and it's Wynn's own tale being told today by his friends, his family, and his fans. He was born in Hamilton, Ontario, and developed his artistic skills working side by side with his father from the age of two at a lithography firm. As a teenager, he published his first comic strips in the Toronto Star, the same paper that inspired Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel's Daily Planet. In 1945, after fighting in World War II with the Canadian Army, Wynn headed to New York to seek his fortune. He had an impressive portfolio already and set up meetings with agents all over town, and he arrived early for one particular meeting on Lexington Avenue. With a half an hour to kill, Wynn was intrigued by a stand-up of Superman he had passed in the hall, and he had some time and a portfolio, so why not try his luck? He entered the office and waited nervously in reception while his portfolio was poured over in the back, and checked his watch. His other appointment was about to begin and he had to leave. But DC Comics had one final question for him. When can you start? Wynn never did make his meeting with that agent, and he was working for DC from that moment on. Because DC knew a good thing when they saw it. He became DC's number one cover artist for almost 10 years, drawing far more covers for Superman and Batman than any other artist, more than many artists put together. He also drew the Superman newspaper strip throughout the first half of the 1950s. And while doing that, he still found time to pursue advertising work and painting and created numerous comic strips, including Obadiah, David Crane, and Larry Brandon for the Toronto Star Syndicate, a hard-boiled Canadian private eye who wasn't above threatening the Crown bad guys with a lacrosse stick when no gun was handy. Go Canada! A Toronto Star editor soon discovered Wynn's one weakness, in fact, spelling. One of his letters home to Wynn begged him, please, Wynn, ask your wife how to spell this word before sending the art in. But all spelling aside, Wynn was if you want a true masterclass in storytelling and comics, check any issue of the 1970s series Spidey Super Stories. Knowing the books were designed for young readers learning to read, Wynn drew only what was necessary to tell the story and support the words, which of course were all spelled by other people. Few artists bring such an understanding of comics to their work. Wynn was more than just a comic artist, he was a consummate storyteller. He drew Supergirl, Plastic Man, Spider-Man, the Legion of Superheroes, Boris Karloff, the Twilight Zone, and countless other characters. He joined Neil Adams Continuity Studios in the early 70s and worked there for over 20 years, always delighted to take on new challenges and learn new techniques. Even in retirement, Wynn never stopped creating. He contributed a political strip to his local paper and even joked about banging another one out the very day before he passed on. Wynn Mortimer was a very humble man. He could afford to be. His loving wife is happy to tell anyone who will listen how good he was. To know Eileen Mortimer is to know Wynn. Her independent spirit and pride in her husband's achievements is palpable in every conversation I have shared with her. I can't present this award to Wynn without saying it's as much hers as it is Wynn's. and I can prove it. Eileen remembers the day when Astrid posed for the cover of Detective Comics 203. She just wanted to pose as she was, but Wynn insisted she wear the dress, the cape, hold the whip, and put on the boots. Not the boots, Wynn. Yes, the boots. Now stop talking. Don't move. Hold your arm up higher. Now that's teamwork. Wynn Mortimer did so many things. He helped shape Joe and Jerry's Superman into the worldwide icon he is today. He brought us so many classic stories and covers of our favorite characters. He made us think with his political cartoons, and even helped some of us learn to read. And he accomplished something even the Batman failed to do for 40 years. He married Catwoman. And really, that's enough for me. So it is my great honor to induct Wynn Mortimer into the Joe Shuster Canadian Comic Book Hall of Fame. His nephew, Robert Cutting, and his daughter, Laura, are here to accept the award. So please give them a warm welcome.
Indeed, an honor to accept this award. My Aunt Eileen is on a four-day junket to Amsterdam, and it's one of those, I'm in there quickly and I'm back out again, but it was a quick trip put together by her son, who's has a business trip there, and asked, would you like to go? And she asked, could you come here? Since you're closer to Toronto than I am, we're just from Oshawa, so she asked, could you come there and pick up the award for Wynn? And it's a great honor to do this for my uncle. My whole life growing up, I heard about this wonderful man, Winslow Mortimer, who drew these comics, who I read his Larry Brannan comic in the Toronto Star religiously. And I kept on asking my parents, could we ever go down to Carmel, New York and visit Uncle Wynn? And it was always, yeah, maybe we'll get there one day, or maybe next summer. And we'd always get to next summer. When can we go visit Uncle Wynn? Because I wanted to talk to him about, how'd you do this? You know, how'd you get into this? I never got to see him in my early life. And then after I was married, had my children, he decided to start visiting here. And so he would visit my parents in Oshawa and ask them to have us come over because he wanted to see the extended family. And the person that he made out of my three children, the person that he made the most contact and, shall we say, connection with was Laura. Met her when she was about 6 years old. And one of the first things she did for him was to take some plasticine because Laura is extremely gifted in being able to model just by taking something and putting it together. And she made, was it a little doll, dog and a ball? Dog and a ball. And as soon as he saw that, the eyes lit up. And the one thing you have to know about Wynn, he always walked around with this pad in his pocket. And he always had a pencil. And as soon as Laura had done this, he whipped out the pad, quickly did a picture, gave it to her and said, here, and then went on from there. It was just a total joy going over and sitting, talking with Wynn, thankfully meeting him in his later years, and after my children have been able to see him. And I would like to show you one thing. This was something that happens. This is where you call serendipity. It just happens right here. We were honored to be given this comic book, the Spidey Super Series, that was drawn by Wynn. And the interesting thing about this particular comic is that in 1994, Wynn sent to Laura a package of material. One of the pieces of the material was the original piece from page 5 of this comic. And as Robert said about the spelling, there's a couple of spots on here where it's been whited out and the proper spelling has been put in. But the fascinating thing for Laura and I was to take this out of the tube that we brought and then to open up this comic and see page 5 finished. So we go from the rough to the actual. On behalf of Wynn Mortimer, Eileen, and their family, we thank you for this.
That's cool. You gotta love it. All right, we come now to the Outstanding Canadian Comic Book Writer Award, and of course, who better to present the writing award than an artist? Because after all, the artist sees what the writer has done before anyone else gets to see. The writer has created it. The artist then has to figure out how to make it work and add to it without distorting it, and also contribute to it. Our artist is best known for his work as a penciler on titles like, well, exactly like New Titans, The Adventures of Superman, Superboy, Power Company, Robin, and New Thunderbolts, which he currently draws for Marvel. You may have heard of them. They seem to be doing well. He's a past nominee for Outstanding Artist at the Schuster Awards, and since there was only one, it was in fact, yes, last year. And if you take a look at the Schuster Awards, if you get a chance to see one, and you're very polite and ask if you could just look at it from a distance, you'll see the beautiful portrait that he did of Joe Schuster. It's on the award plaques. He did that. He lives in the hub of comic book industry, Saskatchewan. Would you welcome, please, Tom Grummond. Tom.
My name's Tom Grummond, or if you prefer, the other sock. As Rick said, I was nominated last year, so I know what kind of suspense is building, so rather than go on and on, I'll just get right into reading the nominees, although it may sound an awful lot like I'm reading the current temperatures. Our first nominee for the Outstanding Canadian Comic Book Writer is Sarah Sam Barnes, for the sum of her work for Marvel Comics, including Dr. Spectrum 5 and 6, Spectacular Spider-Man 23 through 26, and Strange 4 through 6 inclusive, with co-writer J.M. Straczynski. Ian Boothby, for the sum of his work for Bongo Comics, including Futurama 22, Simpsons Comics 102 through 108 inclusive, 110 and 111, and then 113. Futurama, Simpsons Crossover Crisis, Part 2, 1 and 2. Clearing by Morning. Ray Fox, with co-writer Hans Rodionoff of the USA. Oh, here's a good one. Nemivore 1 to 6, DC Comics Vertigo. Joe O'Brien and the lovely and talented Ty Templeton, co-writers. Revolution on the Planet of the Apes 1, Mr. Comics. Jay Torres, for selected works including Batman, Legends of the Dark Knight 190-191 for DC, Love is a Foreign Language 2 and 3, Oni Press, and Teen Titans Go 15-26 for DC. Cool envelope. Mine. And the winner is... Now I'm just going to savor this moment. Because for the first time in a long time, I know something before a writer did. The winner for 2006 is Jay Torres. Yeah.
Met a lot of cool people, participated on a couple of really fun panels, and this just makes the day all the more memorable. So Thanks to Peter Dixon and Kevin Boyd and everybody at Paradise Comics, everybody at the Schuster Awards, all the people on the nomination committee, everybody who voted, the Schuster family, my family, my friends, especially my fiance, Hey Young, who's the light of my life. And thank you to all the fans for all your support. You've been so good to me. Thank you.
Final Hall of Fame presentation. I am very personally delighted to be introducing this gentleman. A huge fan, as I felt compelled to come up and gush to him in the hallway last year. I don't hold the fact that you called security against you at all. I'm still a huge fan. And known to his fans simply as JMS, an award-winning American writer-producer of the television series, novels, short stories, comic books, and radio dramas, one of which, by the way, he is currently developing with our very own CBC. A playwright, journalist, and author of a really regarded tome on script writing. He was also the creator, executive producer, and head writer for a science fiction TV series you may know called Babylon 5, also Crusade. Signed on to an exclusive contract at Marvel, where he began a highly regarded run on Amazing Spider-Man, Marvel's flagship title, with other successful titles for Marvel to follow, including Supreme Power and a run on the Fantastic Four. His awards, numbering in the dozens, include two Hugos, the Ray Bradbury Award from the Science Fiction Writers of America, a Saturn Award, the E. Pluribus Unum Award from the American Cinema Foundation, the Eisner Award, the Ink Pot, three technical Emmys for Babylon 5, a man that needs no further introduction, ladies and gentlemen, J. Michael Straczynski.
So when I got the email saying we want you to give the Hall of Fame Award to Dave Sim, my first thought was, well, that's a gross miscarriage of justice. Not that he should get it, but that I should give it. Because it requires someone of higher regard than I to give this award to someone like Dave Sim. But the Pope was unavailable. But he's on the cell phone, however, so he will be calling him later on today. I had lunch with Dave last year here in Toronto, and we spent much time talking about the intersection between faith and reason. Is that not correct? And it was an appropriate conversation to have because the world, I discovered, is changed by men of faith and men of madness. Because most of us want to kind of fit in with the world, we adjust ourselves. Men of and women of great faith or great madness change the world to fit themselves and their beliefs. Prior to Dave Sim, the idea of doing one story across 10 or 15 years with no major publisher behind you, in black and white, by yourself, day in and day out, was beyond conception. He brought a new concept into existence like unlikely binary stars. And everyone has profited from that. And he's opened and changed the world through his accomplishments and through his belief in the story that he wanted to tell. And I am blinded by the light of that accomplishment. I give you Dave Sim.
Not Joe Straczynski, I heard. I was at Paradise Comics a while back, and Pete Dixon swung his laptop computer screen around and asked if I wanted to check out the Hall of Fame inductees for this year's show. I said, sure. And I must admit that my first reaction when I saw my name there was to check to make sure that there was only the birth year attached to it. 1956-blank. It came as quite a relief. Speaking as the so far only living inductee into the Joe Schuster Hall of Fame, I have to say that I have four small regrets that I have preceded four individuals in doing so, and ask you to help assuage my conscience by giving a nice round of applause to each of them when I read their names out. First is the individual most responsible for their even being a Canadian comics fandom, writer, raconteur, publisher, gadfly, and pioneer of Canadian comic store owners, Captain George Henderson. Yeah. The second is my personal mentor and compatriot and collaborator back in the early days of my career, the late Howard E. Gene Day. And the third and fourth are the Canadian trailblazers of the graphic novel with their graphic novel, The Sacred and the Profane, one of whom is possibly here today. We'll find out in a second. And I'll ask that he stand up and take a bow. Dean Motter, is Dean in the room? Give him a round of applause anyway. And his collaborator, who I know isn't here, who's Ken Stacey. Keeping this as short as possible, bearing in mind that my collected letters 2004 ran 600 pages and that only covered January through June, I will only add that I hope Gerhard is less than 7 years behind me when it comes to his own induction. Cerebus certainly couldn't have happened without his capable assistant. And I'd also ask that you applaud once more if you favor the idea of inducting the Toronto Trio next year, Chester Brown, Seth, and as honorary Canadian, American Joe Matt. And Chevy too. I quite agree. Thank you all for this signal honor, which is most unexpected and most gratefully received. There's really nothing worse than getting a Lifetime Achievement Award when you're still working. And nothing better than getting one when you're all done. So thank you, I'm all done now. Actually, I'm gonna ask your indulgence. This will be the only chance, definitely, that I will ever get a chance to do this. I would like to quote another Canadian I have a great deal of admiration for. Ottawa native, Mr. Paul Anka. And now, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I'm glad. Charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets. See, it's pretty odd. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention.
They're gonna set me up to do this for you.
I did what I had to do, and saw it through without exemption. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. For what is a man, what has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say the words he truly feels. I'm not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows and did it my way. going back 30 years now, Jim Whaley. I'll never get used to calling him James. Sorry, James, it's Jim Whaley. Phoned and asked if I would mind staying on stage after receiving my own award to present the award for best cartoons. There was no way I could say no. And not just because Jim Whaley possesses clear photocopies of my original pencils for Alibaba, Prince of Thieves, and is prepared at a moment's notice to post a link to them on the Comics Journal message boards. No, although that was and certainly continues to be a factor, there's more to it than that. It's a tough row to hoe to be a cartoonist because as a writer, you can't blame the penciler. As the penciler, you can't blame the inker. As the inker, you can't blame the letterer, because they're all you. And in each case, the buck stops here. I had 26 years of that, the buck stops here stuff, and I've been away from it now for 2 years. So having the undoubted honor of presenting the best cartoonist plaque gives me the same satisfaction that walking past Forest Heights Collegiate does, knowing I'll never have to set foot in there again. The nominees for the 2006 Joe Schuster Award for Best Cartoonist are Scott Chandler for Northwest Passage 1 for Homer Park, Darwin Cook for Solo 5 from Eastern Park, Brian Lee O'Malley, Scott Pilgrim, Volume 2, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World from Harry Potter. My buddy Seth, Wimbledon Green, the greatest comic book collector in the world from John Porter. Leif Tanda, Morlach, and I'm going to go with Jill's pronunciation. Editions de la Pastique. It is a really nice envelope. Did you do that, Tom? Yeah. And the winner is Brian Lee O'Malley.
To bring Darwin down. But he's kind of my crosstown rival now. We both live on the opposite sides of Halifax. Having moved from Toronto like last summer, both of us. I don't know that I really deserve it, but I'm very honored. So thanks, everyone.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good.
So I guess it's worth doing again.
Yes, we will. We'll make it a third annual, and it will be here next April. And you will be here, and we will be here. Bring friends, and we'll get an even bigger room. James, why don't you come up and take one quick bow for this? James, get, let's get this.
JoeSchusterAwards.com.
Be there, be square. We'll see you. Thank you for behaving, especially you, Ty Templeton. Everybody else?